Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning. You're listening to In the Drink on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli, and I am very excited to be here today with someone I very much look up to in the industry, someone who's been very generous with his time, his advice, his leadership, one of the greatest sommeliers, one of the greatest palates in the country. Mr. Raj Parr is here. He's the wine director of the Michael Mina Restaurant Group, the author of Secrets of the Sommelier, one of the few books in the last few years that I've actually read cover to cover. It's an outstanding, outstanding read. Everyone should go out and read Secrets of the Sommelier. And the man behind Sandi Wines, which are featured at great restaurants such as Le Picho and Domaine de la Cote. Is the new project. Raj, welcome to In the Drink.
Oh, thank you. It's exciting to be here. Good to see you.
It is an honor for us to have you here. I think that you are truly one of the very, very best in the industry. And someone that I, like I said, I just very much look up to. Raj, tell us a little bit about how you first got into it. I know you tell the story in your book, but someone who actually grew up in India, came to the States and made your way as, you know, kind of carved a niche for yourself as one of the best in the States. How did that go? I'm sure you're humble and wouldn't admit to that last part, but tell us about some of the more influential moments in your career.
Yeah, so I grew up in Calcutta, and since I was like 10 years old, my family had restaurants in Delhi, so I used to kind of like hang on the restaurants, and my dream was to be a chef. And I first went to hotel school in India, where I spent the days in school and the evenings working in the restaurant. And then I came to the culinary school up in Hyde Park, the CIA, in 94. I discovered wine in the beginning of 96, and I fell in love and wanted to be a sommelier, but in 96 there weren't that many sommelier jobs available. There were very few, you know, sommeliers. Restaurants didn't have people had, you know, managers and the waiters at the wine service in most places. But so I spoke to Daniel Jonas, and he turned me down. He's like, I don't need you. No, that's not true, but he did turn me down, but he's forgiven. No, then he said, go work for Larry Stone. So I went to San Francisco. I went to work at Rubicon restaurant where Larry was, and I started as a busboy, food runner, barback, bartender, slowly kind of made my way to Larry's assistant, and just worked there for 3 years, then just, you know, made my way, you know, worked to the fifth floor, then joined Michael Mina in 2003, started the Mina Group with Michael, and here we are 10, I guess, almost 11 years later, and it's almost towards the end of my sommelier career. Just
wow.
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, I got a little bit, you know, moved to Santa Barbara in the spring next year, and pretty much just be doing the, you know, in the vineyard, the winery, and, you know, it's a whole new career. So it's, it's exciting, fun, and kind of, nostalgic, not, you know, knowing that, you know, your future is very different than where it was the last.
Well, congratulations. I don't know if that's breaking news. It's the first that I've heard of it.
Yeah, no, I just decided just a week or 10 days ago, And I'm going to continue, you know, working with the Mina Group and the restaurants, it's time to, you know, live in a peaceful place, and and be close to the vineyard, because this vineyard we bought, we've just released the first wine from Domaine de la Cote, and I need to be close to the vineyards and kind of...
What has drawn you to this lifestyle? Is it truly just this the search of a little more peace and quiet? I remember the first time I tasted the Sandy wines with you was at Barbaloo with Mike Madrigal, and I was so impressed as to how intimately you knew those vineyards and could tell the story of the vineyards, considering that you were this world-famous sommelier who was traveling all over and writing books and doing all this. It's still, you could tell that the thing that gave you so much pleasure was this one vineyard that you cared so much about.
Yeah, you know, it's the mystery of the grape, which is always, you know, fascinating, because, you know, you start as a sommelier to taste wines, understand the wines of the world, and you start loving the wines you love and appreciating, you know, wines around the world. And then when you find, like I found an area in California which I think, you know, it's promising. It has made great wine. Its potential hasn't been exploited. And you know, I think it's just, you know, just chasing the mystery, because you know you always want to find that, you know, the perfect place where you can grow Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, the grapes we love. And I think you know, people before me, Jim Clendenin, Bob Lindquist, Greg Brewer, Steve Clifton, they've all been in the area. And And now, you know, walking down the path with Sashi, it's like, you know, Sashi Mormon, my partner, in Domaine de la Cote, and Sandy, and of course, Charles Banks, who's given us the opportunity to do these things. And, you know, it's exciting. It's just chasing the mystery, I think. That's for me.
Yeah. And you have all of California at your fingertips. What is so special about this one here? Is it the soil? There's a very special soil here, or exposition to the Pacific Ocean. You have a lot of influence. Why is this a great spot?
It's unique because it does have interesting soil. It has diatomaceous earth, which is something which most people have not heard of. One of the world's biggest quarries is right behind our vineyard, and I'm not sure exactly what it does to the wine, but I like the flavors I get from the wine. Diatomaceous, it has a lot of shale. There's a great, it's a very cool area, and, you know, never gets too hot, and, you know, it gets cold, but never gets, like, super cold. It's very, very close to the ocean. Like, our vineyard is 8 miles from the ocean. The most of the valley is between 8 and 13 miles from the ocean. So, you know, it does have a cooling effect. It's really foggy. We can make wines with a lot of acidity, freshness. It's just a place. I mean, you know, I'm not saying it's better than any other place in California, but... You know, I feel that I can, you know, live there, make wine there, and, you know, and that'll be that. So,
yeah. Yeah. I love hearing you say that you don't know what is, what that particular soil gives to the wine. I think that some of that mystery is what kind of keeps us going. And, to hear someone who, you know, when we worked La Palais together, I was asking you every question I could possibly get, because I know that you have like tons and tons of great information. But to know that even you, you know, there are some things, even with vineyards that you're so, you know, in closely entwined with.
Oh, yeah. We have no idea. You know, Burgundy's lucky. They have, hundreds of years of experience.
Yeah.
Here we are, you know, just scratching the surface and, you know, planting a vineyard on barren land. That's like, you know, you have no idea. You're like, you know, investing a lot of time and money and energy into, you know, hoping that something will work. And, you know, it's, again, for, you know, we don't, like, I talked to Sashi a lot, it's not about, like, this is for us now, this is going to give us whatever. I mean, this is for the next generation, the one after that, because, you know, California is in a very interesting place right now. It's the most exciting, I've been in California for the last, 17 years, and right now what's happening in the wine world in California is pretty unreal. I mean, everyone should buy the new book with John Bonnet. Has just written, it's coming out next week, called The New California. And that book is going to be, you know, it's going to change the way people think about California. It's pretty amazing. And I'm just happy to be a part of California, proud to produce wines in California and serve them to anyone. It's because in the past, everyone was like, oh, California wine is big and sweet and oaky and buttery or whatever. And yeah, that might be the case in a lot of the wines. But, you know, there's a new wave, I'm not saying a new style, because in the 60s, 70s, you know, California wines were made just like European wines. And somehow in the middle, things changed in the 90s. But I think they're back. I think there's more knowledge producers have tasting European wines and kind of not imitating the style, but definitely getting ideas of, you know, because we want wines of freshness and wines of you have with food.
Yes. And just to give us a shameless plug over at La Pizza, we're actually going to be doing a dinner with John Bonnet, a book release dinner, and tasting many of the wines from, or several of the wines from his book. It's going to be up on our La Pizza website shortly, but it's not there yet.
Yeah, right? Don't miss that. That if you want to learn something new, and it's pretty amazing.
That's right. one of the first restaurants that I ever saw a significant portion of Beaujolais wines. I can't think of any place where I ever saw a restaurant having multiple Beaujolais from different communes before RN74. I was blown away. It's something that I always loved as a young sommelier because of the value. I really like Burgundy, and I know you've had the opportunity to taste lots of great Burgundy, but Beaujolais always gave me that kind of like Burgundy at a less price. And then when I saw it at RN74, I was like, wow, this is super cool that you're doing that. Yes. Any desire to grow Gamay in California?
We do, actually.
You do? I didn't know that.
It's a very small project with my good friends Duncan and Nathan from Arnold Roberts. I'm a huge, huge Gamay fan, huge Beaujolais fan. I would say probably the most underrated appellation in the world. The most delicious wines at the best value. I think, you know, we want the price to be, you know, affordable. You know, Beaujolais was more expensive than Burgundy in the 20s. Yeah, and it was, you know, and after the after Phylloxera, you know, there was a lot of problems in the appellation. But you know, Gamay is an amazing grape. There's amazing producers, amazing wine. And me, I was with Duncan Nathan, and we were in the Rhone a couple of years ago, and we started like chatting. And said, let's go find a Gamay vineyard. We traveled all around California, and we found these two little vineyards up in the Sierra foothills, thanks to Steve Edmonds. And it's the vineyards he buys the grapes from. And one of the vineyards is on pure pink granite, very similar to Côte de Bruy, and we started working with the grapes. 2011 was the first vintage. It's the label is called RPM, so Roberts Parr Myers, and so we have a little bit more in 12, and then the vineyard which Ron Mansfield planted for us, that's probably going to give us some grapes next year and the year after. So you know, we're on our way to make a little bit of Gamay just to kind of.
Is this commercially available in New York?
You know, Polaner. Doug Polaner will probably get the 2012, maybe in the spring or something. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a fresh, delicious, fun style wine. It's not, you know, Gamay can be serious and Gamay can be fun. And you know, I like we like the fun style more, kind of vibrant and, you know, carbonic maceration and you know, no new oak, traditional winemaking. Nothing too crazy.
What advice would you give a young sommelier who, or a sommelier of any age for that point, who is interested in doing a wine project such as Sandy when you were, you know, still very much involved in the MENA group?
Yeah, you know, it's tough because, you know, it's tough to do two things in the best possible way because you can, you know, it's time consuming, it's energy, you wanna be there, you wanna connect it. It's about vision, it's about like what do you wanna end up doing. It's you know, if you wanna make wine, you know, I would tell someone else, like if you wanna own it, you wanna like really wanna be a part of it, you gotta just go and do it and, you know, be there for, you know, the entire vinification, be there for, you know just the whole process, because you know, that's the only way. It's easy to just, you know, blend a couple of barrels and call it your wine, which is kind of fun to like do, but like eventually you want to kind of, you know, be totally involved. Because that, you know, when I started making, I was doing part selection, it was like, you were always like, you know, relying on somebody else's time, or they have time to bottle your wine or rack your wine, or, you know, and you know, when you get more involved and, you know, you really have to kind of get into, you know all the vineyard sources, you know, how they're grown, where they're grown. You know, it's very, very detailed, and that's the only way to kind of really, you know, produce top wines. And you know, I think making wine for sommeliers is something sommeliers should do when they're established, and maybe even kind of like looking to kind of either, you know, make the wine for their restaurant, or if they want to get serious, then, you know, a way kind of after the restaurant career, because it's very hard to do it together. I mean, unless you're doing it just to kind of, you know, if you do it just for your own restaurant, mm-hmm. you know, in a small, you know, small scale, that'll work well. But if you're going to make it a commercial wine, then, you know, you have to spend a lot of time and, you know, I'm not sure sommeliers have, I mean, they shouldn't have the time to do both, because, you know, I mean, you know, between 04 and 08, you know, I was there only for the harvest part. So it was only after 2009 I kind of started spending more time.
And what's your schedule like now? How are you splitting your time up?
Now I mostly spend time in Santa Barbara, a little bit in San Francisco, and then going around the country showing the wines. And, you know, of course, still working with Michael and helping to manage the restaurants. And I have an amazing an assistant who's the Mina Grove wine manager. He's more than an assistant. He's like, he runs the show, and, you know, I direct him. You know, it's going to be, you know, he does amazing work. So it's, you know, luckily he's like, he knows the way I think, and, you know, it works for Michael and works for me.
All right. We're going to take a very quick break, and we'll be back with more with Raj Parr on In the Drink.
Do you want to taste the finest beer and spirits from over 125 breweries and 30 distilleries? The Craft Experience, the most exclusive craft and spirit tasting event in New York, hosted by great brewers, is available to the public for the first time ever. Join your fellow beer and spirit enthusiasts on Wednesday, November 13th in Manhattan to mingle with the superstars of the craft beverage world. Tickets are available now at www.thecraftexp.com.
And we're back on In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. Your host, Joe Campanelli, here with Raj Parr. Raj, you were, before we left for break, you were talking about some of the people who work with you, the wine manager for the Mina Group. Now, you have been a very successful, in my opinion at least, mentor over the years. There are many people who've come through your programs and gone on to do great things. Some of them have been on the show, like Dustin Wilson. Eric Railsbeck has the few wine labels that we carry at Le Picho, and excited to do that. And just met the other night at a dinner with Alessia Antonori. The new wine director for Maialino came through RN74 as well. Yeah. So you've been very successful in bringing up great talent and then having them go out and do other really fantastic, interesting things. What are some of the tips that you give for mentorship? What do you think is the keys to the success for being a good mentor?
First, I'll start by just, you know, I had a mentor, Larry Stone. He's still my mentor. It's one of those things, once you work for and you have a recognized mentor, you always work for him. So I always look up to Larry and still ask him for advice. It's very important to have a mentor for everyone in the wine business, especially because, you know, right now there's so much demand for you know, young and passionate people in the wine business. I think demand is way more than the amount of people we have. And you have a mentor who, you know, will tell you how things work, tell you the real story, you know, because anyone can tell you, oh yeah, it's going to be great, don't worry. But, you know, they're really, you know, it's a tough business because it's time consuming. It's, you know, you have your full of passion. It's a lot of work, and, you know, it's not necessarily a high paying position, unless of course you're in Las Vegas. But but you know, it's all about passion and hard work, and you know, I always try to train the guys and kind of, I don't criticize people. You know, I usually kind of like tell them the way I do it, and hopefully if they recognize that path and or examples of other people who've done it. But it's very important to teach. I, you know, we've always welcomed people to come and stage with us or do an internship or come and, like, you know, work the floor in for a day just to see how we do it. Because, you know, what's interesting about the wine program for all the restaurants in the MENA group is even from the fine dining restaurants to casual RN74, our wine service is the same. Because, you know, the idea of the wine is the same, even though at the fine dining at Michael Mina in San Francisco, or you're in a casual restaurant, a pub, 1842 in Las Vegas, it's wine service is you know, the approach is exactly the same. So it's important to teach. And when people work with me, I always like, and if they want to leave, I'm like, sounds good. I'll help you find a job. It's, you know, it's all about sharing. I had a great mentor who taught me everything. So it's my, you know, I have to, I'm obliged to teach anyone who wants to learn.
So anyone who's known you for some time inevitably has a story about you just absolutely nailing a wine blind, like to a point where it's just like the vintage, the vineyard, just an extraordinary, like unbelievable story. And I've heard these from multiple people, and no one will, I don't think anyone in the industry could possibly, you know, second guess the point that you are without a doubt one of the greatest blind tasters in the industry. How do you build up? How do you learn to be a good blind taster? And how is this a useful skill?
Learning. Well, you know, I wish I had the answer. I didn't even drink wine until, you know, I think the first time I tasted wine was I was 20 years old in England. And you know, so it was just like I was curious to see what, you know, and even tasting wine, you know, I think what's important, I think, is to really recognize the grape and understand the soil. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, the soil is always tells the truth. Soil tells you the truth. It's, you know, as the wines become more international style and a little bit more, you know, standardized, it's tough. You know, I mean, back in the day, you know, you could very easily recognize almost, you know, any great Chateau in Bordeaux, and even it's getting harder and harder with the use of more oak, more extraction, even in Burgundy and the Rhone. I just smell. You know, I remember that I used to always smell every, I used to go to the farmer's market, I used to go anywhere, always smell every little ingredient, everything, you know, every herb, every fruit, and I used to be kind of a little bit geeky, and also, you know, have fruits and smell them all together just to see the difference in all these fruits, and kind of just have a strong memory. Because there's two things: when you get a glass of wine, you either just drink it or you focus and just smell it, and it's like a Rolodex in your mind. It's just like it's there and you'll never forget it. And that's what I've always done. And it's true that as you get older, your taste buds are not as alert as they used to be. So you know, it's still a fun thing for me to taste wines blind. It happens all the time, and I can go to a restaurant. And I was pouring my own wine at tasting in D.C., and someone brought a bottle to blind taste me. It's fun, but it's, I don't taste as much blind as I used to. In 2000, when I started at Fifth Floor in 1999, I tasted almost all the wines from all the purveyors blind. Mm-hmm. Just to teach myself, because you know, it takes time. It could take like years.
Do you have your own Rajpar nailing a blind wine tasting story? Like what do you think was your greatest wine blind tasting achievement?
I don't know. I don't know. That people have stories. It's just fun. It's, you know, and if I'm wrong, I love to learn from it, because it's, you know, you, how do you miss it? I mean, I remember Larry used to come to me and give me a little one, like tiny, like I'm talking about this, like a, you know, an eighth of an ounce of wine in the middle of service. And we're like busy, like, what is this? And I'm like, in like 5 seconds, I'm like, yeah, 89 Lynchbosch. And he's like, no, you're wrong. It's 90. I'm like, sorry, Larry. I mean, you know, he was like, you know, for him, he was great. He is a great blind taster. For him, it was perfection. I think that's what got me going, because it's like, if you miss it, even, you know, one vintage or one vineyard over, you're not right. You know, that's the way I learned for 3 years. So I think maybe it's a training. I don't know.
And you're one of the founders of a group called In Pursuit of Balance, along with Jasmine Hirsch, who we've had on this show, and we've had several of the producers in your group on the show. It's something that I have used as a benchmark, maybe not a benchmark, but a really good reference point, because I know that your values for In Pursuit of Balance kind of correspond with also what I like with wine. So if there are producers that I don't know that are included in the group, that gives me a clue to say, hey, I better check these out. Can you tell us just a little bit about how you guys got started and what you have coming up for?
When I started making wine, I mean, Jasmine was involved in her family's vineyard in Sonoma. We started talking about other producers and like-minded people and our friends. I said, let's do a small tasting with our friends and invite just our friends and kind of let's do a tasting. Let's discuss what is, you know, what do we want to make? What's the, you know, hence the name In Pursuit of Balance, and not balance, but In Pursuit of Balance. And we invited a bunch of friends, and then Jasmine's like, well, we can't just do a tasting. It's going to, you know, no one wants to pay money, but, you know, we can do maybe a consumer part of it. The consumers come and taste the wines also. I said, okay, let's do that. So we did a very small tasting. I think it was like 16 producers at RN74, and sold out in like 2 days. They're like, I was like, okay. And then when we did a tasting, and we did a, you know, for the trade and press, then for consumers, it was like packed. You couldn't walk. It was like everyone was like, and, you know, and then there was a lot of kind of, you know, I got a lot of hate mail that I'm, you know, maybe, you know, not recognizing all of California Pinot Noir. I'm only recognizing one style, which is not true. I, you know, that's just the style, you know, we make and our friends make. And then the discussion became even more, you know, it got a little deeper, and people got into, then we started doing little seminars and the tastings we did in San Francisco. We did one in LA. We did one in New York. We are back in New York next February. So please check out InPursuitOfBalance.com, and we do a tasting. We have some new members. I think we're up to like 25 or 26 members now. And, you know, it's just a small group to taste wines. It's not, you know, no one's saying we're better or, you know, anything. It's, you know, it's just our own internal discussion of how we can work harder and better in the vineyard and make wines which we think is balanced, because there's no definition of balance. You can be balanced at 12% or at 15%. You can be unbalanced at 12% and at 15%. So it's not an alcohol thing. It's just about, you know, growing grapes and making wine.
Yeah, definitely check out the website In Pursuit of Balance. And let's end on a few notes on your new project, Domaine de la Côte, which is being released now in New York. I'm excited and eager to taste it soon, hopefully.
Yeah, it's just a little extension of Sandy, because Sandy, we buy our grapes, and we're very fortunate to work with great vineyards like Sanford Benedict and Mont Carmel and Wenslow, and, you know, and Domaine de la Côte is an estate vineyard which is on the western edge of Santa Rita Hills, just 8 miles from the ocean, and you know, it's a vineyard me and Sashi totally believe in, and hopefully it'll turn out to be, you know, an historic vineyard for California.
I have if anyone was going to make that historic vineyard, I think it's in good hands with you, Raj Parth. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It has been a true pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you for everything you've done for the industry, and I really encourage everyone to check out the Sandy wines. Go to In Pursuit of Balance, and buy a copy of Secrets of Sommelier. I think it's a great book. Thanks to all of you for listening. This has been In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.